Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we're covering what really makes the chef world work. We've got author Andrew Friedman talking about the people behind the chef, and flavor scientist Ariel Johnson tells us what she has taught some of the best chefs in the world. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11, on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Good morning, I'm Donna Fellenberg, and on Catskill Character today, my guest is Matthew Dempsey. Matthew, who splits his time between New York City and Hortonville, New York, is originally from Jamestown, North Dakota, population 15,427 people, the third largest city in North Dakota. In Jamestown, you can find the National Buffalo Museum and the world's largest buffalo monument, but not much else. So Matthew always knew that he wanted to strike out from there as soon as he could. Matthew's story illustrates how this is possible, how you can overcome many obstacles once you make your mind up to do so. As a result, Matthew is now the general manager of the Dillon Hotel in New York City. Please enjoy my conversation with this week's Catskill character, Matthew Dempsey. Welcome to JFF, Matthew. I'm so happy you're here.
I'm happy to be here.
You know, I'm sure you've heard this before, but you are the only person I've ever met from North Dakota.
I have heard that quite frequently,
actually. Yeah. What can you tell us about growing up in North Dakota?
North Dakota is a good place to be from. Winters are the thing that stick out. They're long, very cold. And then, you know, the other part of that is summer. Beautiful, deep, rich growing season. The change of seasons.
Yeah, we don't normally think about summers in North Dakota. We just think about how cold
right.
It is. All of your family originally from North Dakota?
They're all from there. My grandparents and then all four of their kids, all born there and still live within 20 miles of where they were born. We have the land deed signed by Teddy Roosevelt, so we've got that frame. So long-time New Yorkers and North Dakota connection, I guess.
What was the land deed?
Well, the land deed was saying that this parcel of land is deeded to, and I think it's my great-great-grandfather on this parallel in this section.
That's really cool.
It is.
You know, when I'm here, everything seems to me to be like 20 minutes away. But in Jamestown, how far away is the next city?
Well, everything's 100 miles. Fargo, and then you go 100 miles, and there's Jamestown. Then you go 100 miles, and there's Bismarck. So everything's good. Good hour drive, at least.
How far down below zero does it typically get there?
It's not unusual to be 12 degrees, and then wind chill might be, you know, anywhere from 20 to 40. Easily be 60 below, you know,
wow.
With howling winds. The crazy part is sometimes it's too cold to snow, so then you just have a frozen tundra. I mean, it's very beautiful, but it's pretty shocking.
What are some of the things you have to do to sort of accommodate the harshness? How do you protect yourself?
You just have to be very ready. You know, it's always that hats, boots, glove. Definitely need scarves, all these kinds of things. You dress in layers. Also, you're probably not eating salads. You're eating meat and potatoes because you got to be ready for being outside. And, you know, as far as like growing up in high school, I got my first car and that was a beater, of course. And, you know, beaters quit. But in North Dakota, if your car quits in the middle of the winter, you can be in a lot of trouble, especially if you're driving 100 miles and all of a sudden your car is dead in the middle of nowhere. So I always had snow pants and blankets and candles, tow chains, all these kinds of things. I also would usually have like a bottle of vodka stashed in case I got stuck someplace. Then I'd be a good guest because I could whip that out. And that got replaced more than more than anything else in my snow kit.
There's that North Dakota hospitality.
Yeah, you know, you don't want to show up empty-handed, even if it's due to like weather-related conditions. You know, and probability is pretty good that there will be a weather-related condition in North Dakota.
Didn't you tell me one time when you were a little kid, you went out, you were all bundled up as you're supposed to be, but you made one mistake.
Yes, Hagana, it was a beautiful day, and there was a bunch of snow piled up, so we were making snow forts, and, you know, hat, gloves, scarf, all these. Came back in, but my earlobes had been just sticking out the littlest bit, and they were bright red, pretty much frostbitten.
What do you do in a case like that?
I don't know. You just you warm up. You always warm up, and then you just pull your hat down further next time. You learn a lot in North Dakota.
I guess. Okay. So you're in high school.
Yeah.
There's 260 in your class.
Yeah.
And you all pretty much wanted to get out of there as soon as you could.
Right. So basically, you know, we all wanted to see the rest of the world. We wanted to go. You know, we were ready. We grew up someplace where maybe we didn't see what we would do there. And maybe we didn't know what we were going to do elsewhere, but we just had to get out. You know, kind of that typical teen angst. But we all had it. And man, we all took action on it, so we got out of there. I moved from Jamestown to Fargo, and then from Fargo to Minneapolis. And I was living in Minneapolis, and a friend of mine's like, "Oh, you're from North Dakota. I'm moving my boat business to Fort Lauderdale. You can drive a jet boat and a jet ski down." I was like, "Yeah, I sure can."
Now, were you going to school?
I had moved to Fargo to go to school and failed out of there a couple of times. And then Minneapolis, I was going to school at community college, basically like taking Caribbean history or something, because I was sailing with friends. So I was like, all right, that should be easy. But traditionally, I was more of a go-to-school-and-fail-out kind of guy.
Uh-huh. So college was not working for you.
I just, you know, had no attention span for it. Theoretically, I knew it was great, but, you know, the execution, I had no...
You were more into the party scene.
Yeah, travel, I wanted to see what was going on, I was excited, and, you know.
But you were actually doing a lot of different jobs, right?
Yeah, waited tables, I worked at a Volvo dealership, I temped, I proofed checks for a bank, I worked at American Express as a pension administrator, I worked at International Dairy Queen...
International Dairy Queen?
Yes, it was world headquarters. So then the cafeteria was a full Dairy Queen brazier. And that's where people from all over the world came to learn how to make a cone the perfect Dairy Queen way.
Oh, I went to headquarters for Ben and Jerry's when I was in Vermont.
Yum.
Sort of the same.
Yes, exactly.
A little warmer, however.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you're picking up all of this experience. And at some point, you decided to go back to school.
Right. So I had been going back between Florida and North Dakota and Minnesota, and then I moved to Minneapolis. And I got a job at the Whitney Hotel, which was like the best hotel in Minneapolis. And all the stars stayed there, and I had this big penthouse that all these rooms you could put together and make a big penthouse up on the roof. And it was right along the Mississippi River and totally great. And I started there, and I was like, that's it. I know this. I was like, hotels is absolutely what's up.
What was it about hotels?
You know what? It was making a connection with people. And, you know, it was hospitality. Just was, here's a beautiful place. Make sure everybody that comes in the door is happy. Do the billing. And, you know, it just was very exciting. Housekeeping and valet. And there was a town car that the bellman could arrange to drop you off wherever you needed to go downtown. It was exciting. All the big weddings were there. It was just really, like, it was good energy and exciting and...
There's so many different cogs in that wheel that have to keep running smoothly.
Yes.
Very challenging, I would assume.
Yes. It's a three-ring circus. And they all got to be cute, and they all got to run 24/7.
Right.
Yep.
Didn't you tell me you also work for Bookings.com?
Yes, Booking.com. So I started working in hotels in Minneapolis, and definitely knew New York was next for me. So I bought a one-way ticket to New York, was staying with a friend of mine in Connecticut, and picked up a bartending job right away, but then I got a job at Booking.com. Booking.com was huge throughout the rest of the world. Everybody used them, but nobody knew them in the United States. And Priceline had bought them, so there were seven of us in a line of cubes at the Priceline headquarters. And we started Booking.com and blew it up, and it was amazing. And then the office moved from Connecticut down to Wall Street, and then I was living and working in the city. And that was all very exciting, actually, to see something that massive to be there for the beginning of it.
We can see from what you're saying, you're direction was headed towards New York, and you right. started to formulate an idea in your head that you wanted to work in hotels. Yes. But in the meantime, you had been quite a partier.
Absolutely.
What was it that precipitated your decision to get sober?
So basically, it was just like one afternoon, and I was walking along, and I was by the theater where Wicked was playing, and still is, I'm sure. And all of a sudden, it came to me that I was either going to take a tour of the dirty underbelly of New York, and I was like, well, I probably won't survive that. I was like, or I'm just going to get sober and deal with all my malfunction. I wanted my Big Apple to be bright and shiny and juicy and not like bruised and wormy. So I knew that that's what I wanted. I just needed to like stop drinking and smoking and taking drugs and, you know, look, in essence, grow up, you know? And that was tough, you know, because everywhere I went, we always went out for drinks and everything happened at the bar. And it was like, you know, all the cool kids had drinks and smoked and all this, you know. So
how did you do it?
There was a employee assistance line. So I called them up and they said that they were going to send me to some detox in Connecticut and then to an outpatient in Union Square. And I was like, all right, well, I'll just skip the detox in Connecticut, because I had started in Connecticut, and I was like, oh, I don't like Connecticut. I'm not going up there.
Oh, okay.
So then I just called this outpatient program, and they said, all right, come on in. And the thing was, like, I'd tried a bunch of times before, so I didn't think it was even possible. I didn't even tell any of my friends or family that I was getting sober, because they'd all heard that, like, 10 million times and had seen how that had never turned out. So I went outpatient, did, like, short-term leave from work, and my counselor, she's like, you're going to come here? And you're going to go to meetings, and that's it for you. And I was like, all right. So that's what I did. Oddly enough, you know, 11 and a half years later, I still am sober, which
oh, that's great.
Is shocking, actually.
You know, people don't understand what you just said. They don't understand that. They think that, you know, you have to get, if you're going to try to do that, you got to do it, and then that's it. But it's like anything else. You practice, right?
Right?
And until finally the time comes when you've got it.
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah. Well, it just takes a while, you know, to become comfortable where, you know, it was like the first time I went to a restaurant and they were like, oh, what can I bring you to drink? Of course, I wanted like three martinis. And I was like, iced tea. And I was like super proud of myself that I'd come up with something. Yes, there are other things to drink. And just, you know, kind of starting to build some trust. And then, you know, and all my friends are all sober. And then my brother got sober, too. Actually, you know, what I saw was that people came to New York to do, you know, maybe they were finance or be on Broadway or whatever their dream was. Like, they all came to New York and drank and fell off Broadway or drank and got fired from their finance job. But once they, like, got sober, once they quit drinking and started to grow up, that they all began to flourish. And so mm-hmm. it wasn't the land of broken toys. It was, you know, those that had grown up and were able to realize their dreams. It was amazing. And so to be among other people that are thriving and living without all the malfunction and disaster that had been their experience with, you know, addiction up to that point, they were able to set that down and to pick up these beautiful lives, you know, start to build things, you know. It's shocking, you know. I look around and I see people all over, and they're sober and they're successful and happy, you know.
Yeah.
They're shiny, beautiful people. It's amazing.
Wow, that was great. Thank you. I think this is a great time to take a break on this positive note, and we'll come right back. You're listening to Catskill Character on WJFF Radio Catskill with today's guest, Matthew Dempsey. We'll be right back after a short break.
Having the conversation with your child about substance use is just as important as buying their school supplies. Vapes, including batteries, cannabis, and alcohol, are prohibited on school grounds. And using over-the-counter and prescribed medications must be arranged with your child's school health office. More information and resources available at cccsos.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
When you see actor Danielle Brooks on the red carpet at the Oscars, she will be in full glamour and in grief.
I've been with Sophia for so long, and I just know, like, after the Oscars, that chapter is really done, and that saddens me.
I'm Kai Wright. A star of The Color Purple honors the role that shaped her career. Next time on Notes from America. Sunday evening at 6, live on Radio Catskill.
There's always a story behind the music, how the song was written, why the song was written. I'm Kathy Geary. Join me for Now and Then. Now and Then, Saturday afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is Catskill Character, and I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. Today, I'm speaking with Hortonville resident and general manager of the Dillon Hotel in New York City, Matthew Dempsey. One of the things we haven't touched on yet is motorcycles.
Yes.
They've played an important role in your life, haven't they?
Absolutely. You know, I grew up in North Dakota, and so the country kids were lucky because they could get their driver's license at 14, you know, to drive a car. And, of course, growing up in North Dakota, where it's just wide open. If you don't have a car, you're just, you know.
You could drive a car at 14?
If you were a country kid, but I was a city kid.
Oh, okay.
So here I was ready to drive, wanted to drive, but no, age didn't allow that. But at 14, I could get a motorcycle license. So
that
I was
seems
like,
so crazy, doesn't it? Oh, yeah, you can't drive a car, but go ahead, drive a motorcycle.
Yeah, but, you know, motor vehicles are much different in North Dakota, and there's less traffic. So it's not like people, you know, I guess the fear of motorcycles just isn't in North Dakota the way it is other places. And in North Dakota, there's all kinds of machinery, and working on farms, there's all kinds of things. And, you know, there's augers and combines and all kinds of things that can pull your arms off and, you know, smash fingers and break legs. Oh, this is really just another bit of machinery. But the thing was, like, I was totally clueless. My stepdad's like, okay, Bob Block's got an old motorcycle, he'll sell you. Okay. So maybe it was like a 78 something. I think maybe it was like a 175. And I had no idea, like, how I didn't understand
what that meant.
I didn't understand clutch. I didn't understand how the gears were because it's one down, neutral, two, three, four, five. Anyway, so he just held on to the back and told me what to do, and basically I just fell over a bunch of times until I figured out how not to fall over, which was kind of the same as how I learned how to ride bike out in the country at my grandpa's farm, and that was on gravel, so if you fall, you hit gravel, so I learned how not to.
Yeah, and the same how you learned to be sober.
Yeah.
Fell off a couple of times.
Yeah, pretty much I learned by pain only. That's like my, that is for sure.
No pain, no gain.
Yeah, so motorcycles, so I had one, and then I was working at a car wash and bought another one. Finally, I was old enough to get a car, and then I was off on cars. And then when I got up here, living in New York, I was like, okay, well, parking a car is a nightmare, but I was like, I could get a motorcycle. And so I was all, like, motorcycle crazy and went and got my motorcycle license, because you have to take a class and all that in New York. And then a friend of mine had been on the West Coast, and he moved back here, and his bike was out at his dad's place out in New Jersey, and it hadn't run for a couple of years. I was like, all right, well, I'll buy it, but I'm not going to give you that much because it doesn't run. So I rented a truck and went out, picked it up, and dropped it off at the bike shop up in Westchester, actually, and because a friend of mine had a place up there, and got it. And then I just, you know, got acclimated on that, and it's been amazing. I've ridden all over. I usually put on about 5,000 miles a summer, and then I was looking for a place to keep my motorcycles, you know? A lot of adventure and excitement, and I kept it on the street, and then I would store it in the winter. And then I ended up with another one, because I tried to blackmail myself through grad school, saying, oh, well, if I finish grad school, I could get a new motorcycle, but I found a really great one before I finished grad school. So
yeah, you did go back to school,
yeah.
And you not only got your undergrad, but you got a master's.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was like, okay, let's put down the drugs, put down the alcohol, and hotels was my thing. So I was just working, and I was on the subway, and there was a sign that said, it was for BMCC, for Borough of Manhattan Community College, and it said, start here, go anywhere. And I was like, well, I got to start someplace, because I was like, I got nothing now. And so went there. So I got my associate's in accounting, and then I transferred to John Jay because they had an economics degree specializing in forensic accounting. And so went there, and then so just working and going to school, and that kept me busy and was really great. And then I graduated with no debt.
Wow.
Yep.
Unheard of in this day and age.
Paid as I went, which was like super painful, but still the thing to do. And then I was like, all right, well, let's just, you know, let's do grad school. So I'm done with all but three classes of grad school. I started a new hotel, so I was like, I need to set grad school aside. It was too much, so I'll finish that probably next year or something. But
well, it's not going anywhere. You'll get to it.
No.
You know, I want to get back to the motorcycles right. for just one second, because you told me that really touching story about your brother who was going right. through a really hard time,
yeah.
and you gave him some advice that involved motorcycles. What did right. you tell him?
So, you know, my brother and his wife were, you know, he was really heartbroken, you know, and seeing your little brother in pain is really tough. And he was in Thailand, you know, they'd moved to Thailand, and all of a sudden all this stuff was coming up. And I said, look, go get a motorcycle and start riding and take all the adventures that you need. Get on your motorcycle and just ride. And when you get someplace beautiful, pull over and stand there and look at it and just absorb that and enjoy it and know that's for you. Don't look to your right to say, oh, isn't this nice? Or to your left. You know, you're not sharing it with anybody. This is for you to figure out how to find yourself in your shoes. And to, you know, build that relationship back with you and stop looking to your left or to your right for somebody else to share everything with.
Perfect you know? Advice.
Yeah.
I'm going to quote you for a second because I love what you said.
All right.
You said you told him to replace hurt and loss with adventure and enlightenment.
Absolutely. You know, and that's what motorcycles offer. You know, they've added so much to my life. And, you know, I love adventure and I love the outdoors and go fast and just really amazing.
And you actually went over there to Thailand and
yes.
spent the summer with him? Or
I went over there last January. And
January.
I rented a bike and he had one. And it was funny because the bike I rented is like the same one that he had. So it was two brothers on the same bikes riding
Aww.
Across Thailand. Yeah, we rode about like 1,200 miles, which was a bunch of kilometers. But I'm American, so I don't know anything about metric. and then, you know, so you drive on the other side of the road there, and that was great. And then this summer, he came out, and since I've got two motorcycles, we rode up to Nova Scotia, which was 2,500-mile round trip. And that was amazing. I love my brother, and to just get on two bikes and take off.
So you've been all over the world on your bike, basically, or on
yeah.
a bike.
Yeah, I rode in Hawaii.
Have you come across any particular places that really resonate for you?
Like, I love riding motorcycle around New York. Manhattan is an amazing place to ride motorcycle. And then up here, you know, it's like riding along the Delaware. There's some great places with high altitude. Like, there's a Hawk's Nest, which is very high up. And you look down, and there's the Delaware, which I love, very much drawn to the Delaware River and the whole valley. And that's why being here is just amazing.
Do you ever get scared?
Yes, absolutely. I hate heights. And so there's a couple of different places where, man, I got handlebars. I am hanging on tight. Yeah, and, you know, there's no seat belts. There's no nothing. When you're on motorcycle, you're on motorcycle. I always laugh when I get on the freeway and it says, please fasten your seat belt. And I'm like,
no can do.
That's not what's up with this.
So you found a home for your bikes.
Yeah.
And you've established a home for yourself here in
yes.
Hortonville. It's quite a contrast being in the city, managing a hotel, and then coming out to the Catskills. I imagine
right.
that it offers you some kind of balance.
Absolutely. Look, you know, running a hotel is not an 8-hour-a-day job. And it isn't, you know, there's just every kind of everything that comes up every day. You know, it's a little bit like managing chaos because you're just, you know, there's heating, there's cooling, there's guests, there's weather, there's international markets, there's all these kinds of things that come together. And as a general manager of a place, people are looking to me.
To answer
for answers
any
and
question.
Directions and
right.
to set the tone and to, you know, problem solve.
I was wondering, you know, we keep calling the Dylan, the hotel right. that you manage, a boutique hotel. Would right. you tell the listeners what a boutique hotel is?
Right. So a boutique hotel is generally usually a little independent place, which the Dylan Hotel is, and that has some kind of interesting story. So, for example, the Dylan Hotel had started as the Chemist Club, which was built in 1911, and it's this great old building, has this amazing facade to it. And Morris Loeb had started the Chemist Club and finally built the building, and they all came together, and it was a lot of German chemists, and they helped get the programs going at Columbia and NYU.
Hmm.
Thomas Edison was one of the guests at the opening dinner there. There's just an amazing history. So that's the Dylan. There's still there's this Benjamin Steakhouse is there, and then above the mantle is the insignia for the Chemist Club.
Huh.
So I've got a welcome letter that gives some history, and I'm like, look around, you'll see the insignia, and then we also some of the staff have lapel pins, and the Chemist Club still meets there once a month.
Oh,
you know, it's a much different clubs have all changed a lot. So the Dylan, when it was the Chemist Club on the second and third floor was this world-class library, chemical library. There was no internet, so you came there. And then on the 11th floor was a laboratory where all these guys could all come together and work on projects and all of that. And then they would rent laboratory to people that needed to work on whatever they were working on.
Wow.
And then all the big chemical companies were there, right around there. So then every day in the bar from 5 to 7, Philip Morris was across the street. So they all bring the cigarettes over, and all these guys are smoking and drinking and doing deals. And then we're a half block from Grand Central, so then they'd all go and get on the train and head up to their places in Connecticut and Westchester. Just really, really, really great history, like
wow.
true New York, and it's
like a whole different time.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess I wanted to know if you have like a basic philosophy for running a hotel.
Well, I'm a little bit of an idealist, and so as one goes through life and you have a lot of people that you've worked for, there's people maybe I've not enjoyed so much how they've run things. My thing is just trying to create a really great place to work, take care of guests, take care of staff, you know, because it's internal customer service, taking care of my front desk agents. So if there's something I need to communicate to them, and if I bring them in my office and yell at them, and I'm like, go be nice to guests, they're like, you just yelled at me. How, you know, I'm traumatized. What do you mean?
They go out there feeling whipped.
Exactly. And that's, you know, it's like be nurturing, create a healthy environment, really creating a healthy property, you know, which is a tall order. But, you know, as I keep pushing that forward, you know, supporting staff and helping them every which way. You know, if they're there and music is their thing, I support them and give them a schedule so they can go do music or, you know, whatever
smart
they need, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If they're happy, I'm happy. Everything works out so much better.
Right, because it all starts with them.
Absolutely. I have the philosophy of hospitality, but, you know, sometimes I'm stuck at my desk working on something else. And so if they're giving the kind of hospitality that I would, then I know everybody's going to be happy.
That's great. I'm so happy you came in today. I really learned a lot.
Nice.
So thank you so much, Matthew.
Thank you.
I'm Donna Fellenberg, host of Catskill Character, with today's guest, Matthew Dempsey. Catskill Character is on every Saturday right after Farming Country with Rosie Starr. The last Saturday of the month is Travels with Triggs with host Greg Triggs. You can find us on WJFFradio.org or do as Greg does and get the WJFF app. Any way you listen, you're turned into the best little station in the Catskills, WJFF. And we thank you so much for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include SUNY Sullivan, a community college in the Sullivan Catskills focused on preparing students for the future. More information at sunysullivan.edu. Livingston Manor, dining, shopping, and the arts at the gateway to the Catskill Park. LivingstonManorNY.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Thank you for all the ways you help WJFF Radio Catskill. Your support sustains the news, music, and local voices that make up WJFF. It's only possible because of your generosity.
help keep it going. Consider signing up to be a sound supporter to make sure Radio Catskill has your constant support. Go to WJFFradio.org. And thank you for supporting public radio in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.
I'm Stephen Dubner. I'm the next Freakonomics Radio. What kind of inspiration should we take from the life and work of the physicist Richard Feynman?
You know, the great thing is to be endlessly curious.
And how has Google's search monopoly affected what we see online?
It's quite lucrative for them to auction off those slots, and it's not always with the customer's best interest in mind.
It's next time on Freakonomics Radio, Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello.